science is interesting, and if you don't agree, you can fuck off.
Yes, indeed. It is now time for Dear Science with AUT's Alan Blackman. How are you going today, Alan?
Oh, we're back in term time now, or semester time, as I should call it. So we're lecturing, we're labbing, you know how it is.
All the good things.
Oh, yes, indeed.
All these bright young chemistry students, I'm sure,
if
who
only
are
they were.
Bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, arriving at your classes on time and handing in their assignments
I'll
that are all
it.
A+.
Yes, you're right.
As a tutor myself, having tutored a few semesters, that is, yeah, definitely said with tongue-in-cheek. Anyway, so first up today, we're talking about how the first woman to receive a prestigious mathematics award has died. So who is this? Tell me about who she is and what sort of stuff that she's done.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'm going to be able to tell you much about what sort of stuff she's done, because this is hardcore mathematics, which is definitely not my specialty. Even softcore mathematics I'm not into. So, but her name was Maryam Mirzakhani, and she was an Iranian mathematician, or certainly of Iranian descent anyway, and she ended up as a professor at Stanford University, a very prestigious university in the States. And she won a thing called the Fields Medal in 2014. And the Fields Medal is the highest achievement in mathematics. So it's awarded to 2, 3, or 4 people every 4 years. And so she was quite an outstanding scholar and the first female winner of the Fields Medal, which is a quite remarkable achievement. And remarkable in the fact that it was first awarded in 1936 and it's taken this long for a woman to win the Fields Medal. So, and she, yeah, tragically died very, very young, age of 40, of breast cancer. One of the things about the Fields Medal is you've got to be under 40 years old to win it. So... A real tragedy there. Some other things about the Fields Medal. A New Zealander has won it, a guy by the name of Vaughan Jones, who, a University of Auckland alumnus, and I think he also ended up at Stanford University as well, but he won it in 1990. And one of the questions that's often asked about maths is why is there no Nobel Prize in maths? And so the story goes, and this may or may not be apocryphal. But apparently, so the Nobel Prizes were obviously started by Alfred Nobel, so he gave money for the 5 disciplines, and this is where I'll forget them, so chemistry, physics, literature, medicine, and peace. And maths sort of seemed an obvious omission there, and apparently the story was that Nobel's wife had an affair with a mathematician. And so apparently that's why there's no Nobel Prize in mathematics.
Really?
Really.
Wow, that's
like, the story.
Kind of trivial and...
petty, yes, yes, yes.
Just take that, maths.
But I guess this sort of leads to a larger question of the participation of women in academia. Why has it taken so long for... a woman to win the Fields Medal? Why are there only 4 women who've won the Nobel Prize in chemistry, for example? Where are all the women in academia? Because it's certainly not a 50-50 mix, certainly not in my field, chemistry, anyway, and a lot of the sciences, I think women are, you know, obviously highly underrepresented. Which it kind of doesn't make sense to me, because when I was down at a southern university I used to be a staff member at, their first year chemistry class was around about 1,800 students, so big chemistry class, and the split was 60-40, women to guys. Mm. So, you know, they there was an enormous disparity there. Where do they all go is the question. And, you know, maybe it might be that in years to come that we'll see this, enormous number of women coming through in science and taking the academic positions. And but it's just not happening at the moment. And, that's something that needs to be addressed one way or the other, I think. So
Right, that perhaps that disparity has been addressed somewhat in terms of some of the students coming through now, but it hasn't quite, yeah, I guess if they're still sort of young, they're still studying, they're still, in their process, that it hasn't quite gone upwards to those more esteemed positions. But then also, I mean, there's tons of research that suggests that there is discrimination in terms of hiring practices and all that sort of stuff. So,
well, I mean, and again, you certainly see it at postgraduate level as well. I think the gender disparity, I guess, exists also in postgraduate and PhD. So you do see a lot of women coming through and doing the higher degrees. And then, you know, at the end of the PhD, what happens? Where do they go? Because, you know, that's the track to academia is obviously going through doing your postgraduate, doing your PhD, doing your postdoc, blah, 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 and then you end up back in academia. So, yeah, I don't know. It might be something that works itself out in years to come or not. And having said that, I guess maths is, if you're going to pick one science or maybe two sciences that are very, very, very... probably just guy heavy or just things that are for guys, basically. I don't know, but physics and maths.
Dude,
I mean,
stuff.
Yeah. You know, physics and maths would be the two, wouldn't they? I mean, you really just don't see many women engaged in either of those particular disciplines. Why?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it is, I don't know, is that like, is there sort of some sort of masculinity as part of it? Is this like sort of logical brain type of, I don't know, there is that sort of...
It could potentially just be societal.
I'm saying, that it's like this construct of related to masculinity and seeing it sort of in, through that lens. And then, I don't know, sort of more art sort of based subjects possibly is like the more sort of... more linked to a femininity, so I don't know.
But then again, you know, in years gone by, back when I was at uni, it was sort of engineering was a very, very male-dominated thing. But now that's certainly changed over the intervening X number of years.
Oh, really?
So, oh, yeah, you know, very, very much so. It used to be basically, you know, guys, and drinking, and there was very much that sort of stereotypical sort of engineering student type thing.
The engineering lad.
Yes, indeed. Yes.
The nerdy lad.
Yes. Now there are girls as well, but they're still drinking. That definitely never went away.
Thanks Fair for enough. The insight,
yeah,
Will.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Right, yeah. I guess it's still part of that wider process of getting more females in STEM related subjects.
Absolutely.
That it's all just kind of, it's not just like one day we wake up and it's magically disappeared. It's kind of just a ongoing sort of iterative process that it's, you know, some areas it might be more in than others for now, but next up today, we're looking at how Harvard scientists have managed to store video inside DNA. Why did they do this?
Yes, indeed. Why? And because they could, I think, would be the answer to that. Those of you who are regular listeners would remember we talked about CRISPR a few weeks ago, which is this gene editing tool, which basically means that you can construct any piece of DNA that you want. And remember, DNA is made up of your four bases. You've got your A and your C and your G and your T. And the body uses that code of the A, G, C and T to basically construct itself. And so these guys at Harvard were thinking, okay, well, if the body uses that particular code to store genetic information, as it were, then why can't we use DNA to store other types of information? And again, this isn't the first time this has been done in terms of the concept, but now what people have managed to do is to take a little animated GIF and store it into DNA. And the animated GIF that they've chosen... GIF? Oh, now that's a... Well, oh, yes.
Wait, should we
graphics
talk about that later?
Interchange format, so it's a hard G, isn't it? I've always called them GIFs. Are they GIFs?
Well, oh, I feel like popular common use is GIF.
Oh,
but then I do feel
well
like the person who I remember seeing, you know, this big sort of kerfuffle on social media a little while ago about how actually the guy who created them came out and said it's actually GIF.
There we go.
And everyone just freaked out because
I feel vindicated by social media. Yes.
Can I just say that we're discussing putting video into DNA and we get
I'm so sorry. I was just like, oh, I just want to ask him about that. Okay, continue.
There's that banter again. It's just,
As you were.
Okay, so as I was saying, so they've taken this GIF or GIF, we are undecided, and the one that they've chosen is actually a work of a guy by the name of Edmund Muybridge, who, again, some of your listeners might be familiar with, and he was a pioneer of photography. And one of his great things was he settled the bet as to whether a horse, when it's running, raises all 4 feet off the ground at the same time. And he figured, he worked out this series, and this is sort of the late 19th century, a series of cameras and tripwires, whereby people would walk, or they'd run, or horses would run, or whatever. And when they broke the tripwire, the camera would take a photo. And so they would get these very, very closely spaced photos. This is back, obviously, in the day before sort of rapid cameras and stuff. And he showed that, yes, indeed, horses do have all 4 feet coming off the ground at once. And so they've taken one of these, or a few of these images, turned them into an animated GIF or GIF, and encoded them so that they can be stored now on the DNA. So the way that they do that is essentially computers work by using ones and zeros, and they can encode that to mean whatever they want it to mean. In this case, they're encoding using four things rather than two, so the A, the C, the T, and the G, bases on the DNA. And they then encoded the GIF into a piece of DNA, which they synthesized. They then fed the DNA to a bacterium called E. coli. The E. coli then incorporated the bacterium into its own genome. It replicated, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They gave it a week or so, and then they looked at the genome of the E. coli, and they found that this piece of DNA had been incorporated in that. And they could then extract the information back from the DNA in the genome, and they could play it. They lost about 10% of the information, but the other 90% was still there. So they still got out this recognizable GIF of a horse actually running, which is what the animated GIF was. So
why did they, do you know why they lost the information?
They're talking about sort of mutations and stuff like that, which do happen when you're replicating DNA. So you do get these unavoidable losses of information, but that's minimized when we're talking about the human genome and stuff like that. So possibly, and this is a foreign piece of DNA, so perhaps it doesn't get recognized so well by the E. coli. So, but, you know, I guess they're showing proof of principle, I suppose. And it does seem an awful lot of trouble to go to do this, but I guess you think down the track, then, you know, you could store, you know, messages in your DNA and stuff like that. You know, it'd be a great great thing for spies and stuff. You could just encode pretty much anything, and I'm sure people will. And apparently, so there's a band called OK Go who you may have heard of.
They did that music video on the treadmills.
See, that's the thing. Nobody knows this song, but everybody knows the video. Okay, I couldn't tell you the name of the song, but the video is absolutely brilliant with the treadmills. Yep, you can't name it. Either. Yep, no.
I think it's called Here It Goes Again.
Oh, you might be right. Yes, that sounds familiar.
That sounds kind of right.
So apparently they are wanting to release their next song on DNA, apparently.
Ooh.
This is, you know, because they've done everything now. They've, you know, made all these wacky videos. They're very clever videos, I'll give them that much. The music... perhaps not so much, but this seems to be their goal, is to use DNA to encode an MP3 and have their song on DNA.
How do they? But then what then? Just like, just
do I need to buy a human being if I want to listen to their song?
Yeah, or do we?
They didn't really kind of go into how you would then
DNA
decode it.
Player?
A DNA player. You'd need a DNA player. Yeah.
Sounds like the hip new thing. DNA player.
Micro player.
Like an amplifier with the DNA player, or is it? Oh my gosh, there's so many questions. Anyway, okay. And then our final story today, we're looking at how the New Zealand team got 1 silver and 3 bronze medals in the recent chemistry Olympiad.
And this is something that I haven't seen in the media anywhere.
What is a chemistry Olympiad?
What is a chemistry Olympiad? It's
tell me, Alan.
Okay, it's a high school tournament, I guess you could call it, or Olympiad. And it runs every year, and there's teams of four from about 60-something countries all around the world. And they all go to somewhere in the world. This year it was Thailand. This was the 49th iteration of this thing. And what they do is that they sit exams and they do practical laboratory work, and they get graded on all of this stuff. And then they get awarded gold, silver, or bronze medals, depending on how they did. I think the top 10% get gold, the top 20% get silver, and the next 30% get bronzes. And so the New Zealand team... and I'll read out their names because we should know. There's Zijun Hui and Janice Ho, I think, from McLean's College. Malidu Ratanayake from Auckland Grammar, and Sanghyeon Yom from Auckland International College. And so, as you say, 1 silver and 3 bronzes, which sounds pretty good, even better when you realise that we beat countries like France, Germany, Spain, and the Netherlands. So these sort of top European countries, and we did better than that, and that should be celebrated in the media, I think.
Mm, for sure. That's bloody cool.
Yeah, no, absolutely brilliant. And this happens every year, and yeah, one of my mates is involved in picking the team and stuff, and you know, any high school students out there who are listening, if you want a free trip to somewhere exotic and you like your chemistry, then you should certainly apply for this. As I say, it runs every year, so keep an eye out for this.
Awesome. Cool. Well, thank you for coming back again this week, Alan.
Not a problem.
We'll see you again next week.
Shall do. Thanks, Shamina.
That was Dear Science.